Welcome to The Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising supporters podcast. Stick around for interviews, analysis, fan stories, and our love affair with Phoenix Rising. And now, to kick things off, is your host, Niall McCarthy.
Even though our team is struggling, there's no need for fans to turn on other fans. People have the right to different opinions, whether it's, you know, should Rick Shantz stay for the rest of the season or should he go? Whether it's, you know, are we satisfied with the ownership right now or a little bit less than satisfied? Regardless of differences on opinion, we don't need to tear each other down.
Phoenix Rising family, those wise words are from Dominic Kearns. You'll hear from him later in the show when he brings us the monthly roundup. June was a historically bad month for the club, and Dom does a great job reviewing and explaining it to us. Stick around for that. Before we bring Dom on, we've got Matt Robards for our game roundup where our boys took on Las Vegas Lights. It's the second time we lost to Vegas this season. It brings us to a total of 9 losses in this campaign. Overall, that's 2 more losses than wins. Breathe deep, my friends. Later in the show, John Morrissey is back with his weekly segment on news and results from around the league that matter to Phoenix Rising fans, and we'll wrap things up with a preview of our next game. We signed a new player this week. His name is Lamin Jonay. Lamin rhymes with jammin', you've gotta love it. He plays as a forward. He was with Atlanta United 2 in 2020, played in the Dominican Republic's first division in 2021, and now he's in Phoenix, joining us on a 25-day contract. Welcome to the club, Lamin. Maybe you'll be the game changer. Although what we need is more than a game changer, we need a season changer. So give it your best shot, Lamin. We're all in this together. Another player signing that's undoubtedly on your radar this week is Gareth Bale signing to LAFC. I'm sure that Bale will have a very different experience in LA than he did in Madrid. It's a happy day for both him and the LAFC fans. Sticking with Los Angeles, we were treated to a fantastic US Open Cup game last week where we saw MLS team LA Galaxy host and lose to second division outfit Sacramento Republic FC. The other match we had our eye on was Division 3 squad Union Omaha taking on Sporting Kansas City. That match didn't go in the way that we wanted it to. We were hoping that Union Omaha would take that one. They lost 6-0, but they're $25,000 richer for being the last standing team in their division. So that'll be a nice night out for the lads. We had a special segment in last week's show about the Lamar Hunt US Open Cup. We wanted to find out who Lamar Hunt is, why his name is associated with this tournament, and there's no denying that it was time well spent. Check it out in episode 61. You'll find it just after the 45-minute mark. We discovered a lot of super cool things about Lamar Hunt and his incredible sporting legacy. Speaking of legacy, let's jump into the show and hear about how Phoenix's legacy of domination is in need of a reboot. Thank you for spending your time with us today and enjoy the show.
What's up, football-loving maniacs? This is Devin Kerr, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, on Friday, June 24th, our boys Phoenix Rising traveled to Vegas and scored 2 goals against Las Vegas Lights. Aiden Quinn scored. It was a nice addition to the brace he scored in his last game, and Santi Moore got his first goal of the year. Sadly, 2 goals were not enough to win as we conceded 3 goals. This was the second time Phoenix played Vegas this season. Both matches were in Vegas, and Las Vegas Lights were the victors on both occasions. Joining me to discuss the game are Matt Robards and Kelly McCarthy. Matt and Kelly, welcome back to the Fan Experience, a Phoenix Rising Supporters podcast. Delighted to have you on. And Kelly, if you could do us the honors and kick us off by setting the scene for us.
My pleasure. So playing Las Vegas, especially away, is always a crapshoot. You never know what you're going to get in terms of their lineup, their field conditions, their off-field antics, water balloons. You just never know. Unfortunately, we also don't know what we're going to get when Phoenix Rising takes the field. We've lost 3 in a row, 2 at home, and we've seen a rotating cast, particularly in the back line. I mean, I just feel like we're having a hell of a time defending. And in recent matches, we're also struggling to find the back of the net. Excluding Rising's last match against Loudoun, Phoenix has scored 3 goals in the previous 5 matches. So we've seen Phoenix struggle to defend, struggle to score, and consistently struggle to protect the middle third. And when you add that up, you get problems across 100% of the pitch. Now, Vegas, on the other hand, is coming off 2 big wins, shutting out Orange County at Cashman Field and then taking all 3 points from San Diego in their house. They have some quality draws on the season, including a 0-0 tie against Sacramento. So the main thing for me when I look at Vegas right now is just how few goals they're giving up. So if you look back at their last 6 matches, they're pretty strong defensively. You know, if you remove their big loss against Colorado, they have 2 shutouts and 3 matches where they only give up 1 goal. So it's a little alarming because they're looking strong on both ends. So, I mean, you really don't like to admit it, but I think we all knew this match was going to be tough. Vegas wants to prove their last 2 big wins were deserved, and Phoenix has everything to prove. So for me, this one felt like a roll of the dice.
Matt, over to you. What were your thoughts going into this match?
Not positive. I mean, you just look at the run of form Phoenix has been in compared to, as Kelly said, the run of form Vegas has been in. And we can make excuses all we want with why Vegas might be playing the way they are, you know, the MLS call-ups, you know, their partnership with LAFC. But it's a tough place to go. And I was not feeling positive going into this match because we just haven't seen any improvement in this Phoenix Rising team in the last, I'd say, 3 matches.
Yeah. Absolutely. So it's been announced recently that Gareth Bale is set to join LAFC. and who knows if they'll send him down next time to beat Rising. We'll see. So guys, before we get to the game highlights, let's take a look at the starting 11, the starting formation. Phoenix came out with a 3-1-4-2 and Vegas came out with a 4-2-3-1. So Phoenix had 3 at the back, Vegas had 4 at the back. We had 5 in midfield. Phoenix went for 1 defensive midfielder, whereas Vegas went for 2. That left us with 2 strikers up top. It left Vegas with 1. And this is what it looked like. On the Phoenix side, we had Ben Lund between the sticks. Our 3 center backs, Darnell King, Manuel Madrid, and James Musa. Kev Lambert was our defensive midfielder. And then our 4 in the middle. We had Santi Moore on the right wing, Joey Calistri on the left wing. And then our 2 central midfielders, Irokosi Donasiano and Aidan Quinn. Our 2 strikers, Marcus Epps and Richmond Antwi. So Matt, what any surprises here and how did you like this lineup?
I think the whole thing has to be a surprise. I think this lineup is really showing us how unnerved Shantz is in his position. Historically, we can look back and Shantz is a 4-3-3 coach. That's the formation we would always run. You always kind of knew what to expect in the way that we're going to play. And we're seeing in this run of form now, I think Shantz pushing the panic button a bit and kind of abandoning what he's known for his coaching career at Phoenix Rising and what he's instilled in a lot of these players that have been with him for a while. And now they're just changing the system around. And I think really what we saw against Las Vegas is that this just didn't work. A lot of surprises in the lineup. Richmond Antwi, the big surprise. I mean, his first start, you know, to see a guy like Greg Hurst, who's our leading goal scorer, starting on the bench, was shocking. And then I think it was interesting to see Manuel Madrid starting at that central center back position. When you're playing in a back 3, that is a vital position in the back lineup there, pretty much commanding that back line. And when you have a guy like Manuel Madrid who has, he's just mistake prone. And at one point in the game, I looked at my wife and I said, I'm pretty sure Manuel Madrid might be the worst signing we've ever had. He just doesn't look like he's comfortable in the formation in this team. And on the flip side, you had Joey Farrell sitting on the bench. So it just seems like Shantz is trying to throw something at the wall to see what works. And he's abandoning what he knows and kind of just putting in guys to try to create a spark, and it really backfired.
Well, Kelly, that's a lot. Over to you. Follow up on that.
Yeah. And I'm down with everything Matt just said. I have no complaints all the way down to, I was going to use the expression, throw spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks, except I couldn't really remember why we use that expression. So I'm with him. Really, I think the only thing I would add on is I was excited to see Antwi and Epps. I was excited to see what they could do together, the chemistry that they might have with one another. And the other thing I would say is, you know, keeping in mind, I agree with Matt. I will say for Shantz, it's a bit of damned if you do, damned if you don't, because I do think rotating out players that are underperforming is a good move. There is nothing more motivating to a player than losing their start. On the other hand, we really do need to build chemistry, consistency, and continuity. So it's kind of a tough call. You know, where's the line? How do you rotate people out while still building chemistry? So, I mean, the only other thing I'd add on top of that, I always have more to add, is just a shout out to Aiden Quinn, who was looking to join the 40-40 club in this match. So, you know, kind of kudos to him. I think he came into this match with 39 goals and is looking for that 40th, which was exciting for him.
Awesome, Kelly. Okay, let's get into the game. Phoenix had 5 attempts on goal in the first 10 minutes. Aiden Quinn and Joey Calistri sent their shots wide. Manuel Madrid sent a header wide, but striker Richie Antwi, his 2 attempts held the most promise. Antwi's first came 4 minutes into the game. It started with Aiden Quinn taking a corner from the left side of the park. Quinn floated the ball into the mixer. Antwi muscled his way up to meet it. He connected and sent the ball towards goal with force. The ball hit the underside of the crossbar. It bounced down, hit the floor, and bounced out. The ref said no goal. Matt, I don't know if we'll ever know if that ball was over the goal line, but it was a nice attempt from Antwi.
Yeah, they started out this game really strong. The camera quality at Cashman Field is absolutely horrible, and you mix that in with just the poor fields anyways, and all the chaos going on around the field, that we're never going to know for sure if that went in. I personally don't think it was a goal. I don't think you saw the entire ball cross the line, but it was a great attempt. And really, this first 10 minutes is just the story of our season so far. A lot of chances, but we're failing to convert.
Yeah. I'm sticking with Antwi. His second attempt was a shot on goal in the 10th minute. It was the first shot of the game to challenge the goalie. It was a good attempt from a tight angle, but the goalie was up for the challenge. The momentum stayed with Phoenix for a short while until the game opened up, and then Vegas turned up their attack. Over the next 15 minutes or so, Vegas had 2 shots on goal and 3 corners, all unanswered by Phoenix. This takes us up to the 31st minute, to Vegas's first goal. Vegas were passing the ball around the left side of the Phoenix box. They played it back to the Vegas captain, Danny Crisostomo, who switched the play to the right side with a pass into the area to the feet of their right fullback, Alvaro Quezada. Quezada did well to beat his defender, Joey Calistri, and he sent the ball to the top left corner, literally pinging the crossbar and the left post before landing in the goal. Kelly, your thoughts on that?
Well, the first thing I have to think of is, am I saying Crisostomo right? Because I felt pretty good about it, and then I heard you say his name, and now I'm not sure. This was heartbreaking, and I mean, the truth is, you know, this is when, for me, you think about how much you wish we were converting and we were stronger in the final third. Because honestly, you know, I don't want to get ahead of us, but I think Vegas's goals, a couple of them, were really good and really hard to defend. I mean, this is just a really wonderful shot by Quezada. It was just tough. You know, Joey Calistri does his best to get in the way, and it's a brilliant shot. So if you've already got one in the back of the net, this is less painful. I will say Crisostomo had a little bit too much time and space. I want to say, forgive me, I can't picture this perfectly, but I think Kevin Lambert was the person that took a little too much time approaching Crisostomo, that gave him time to set up this play. And we can't do that. And that's a big problem that we will see all match, is just giving their midfielders too much time to set up the plays. So this was heartbreaking. Again, you know, I think it was a beautiful shot, and sometimes, like, that's it. What can you do? But the challenge was getting down first, and all of a sudden, you know, you sink with the feeling of, is this game going to get away from us?
Matt, any follow-up on that?
Yeah, it was a great shot, but it never should have came. I mean, there, you know, you said it right, Kelly. There was no pressure put on the midfield, the forwards for Vegas Lights. I mean, even Kalistri was not well positioned. He was off of his man. He wasn't up close, so he wasn't tight on him. So it just opened up that ability to drop the ball to the right and have a shot. You know, you were correctly pointed out, Lambert's slow to get over to shut down that space. And it's something, it happened so much throughout the game that even the commentators for Vegas, and let's be honest, USL commentators are not the best commentators in business, were correctly pointing it out, that there was just no one shutting down the ball for Phoenix. And that's the frustrating part, being a supporter, being a watcher, is just seeing almost what appears to be lackadaisical defending and play.
Yeah. Excellent.
I agree.
Points,
if I can just chime in, I really appreciated the commentators as well. I loved that they pointed this out. It made me feel less crazy, because it's constantly for me just like, step to the ball, commit. I don't care at this point. I don't even mind if you overcommit, because I just want to see you pull up close to these players who have the ball. So that's super frustrating. And another comment by the commentator was, you know, why are you playing so gently? Like, you don't want to be fouling these players, but like, give them some shoulder, force them off the ball. And that's what's so bizarre. It says to me, we're hesitant, we're lacking confidence.
Right. Kelly, I just want to reiterate that in the 15 minutes before that goal, Vegas had two shots on goal and three corners, all unanswered by Phoenix. Well, the exact same scenario played out in the next 10 minutes. Two more shots on goal and three more corners from Vegas. Again, completely unanswered by Phoenix, except that Santi Moore picked up a yellow for a bad foul born out of frustration. So maybe that's not what you were looking for, Kelly, when you said give a little more shoulder. But we
I'll
all sensed it. Another Vegas goal was imminent, and it came in the 41st minute. Here's what happened. Phoenix's Manuel Madrid played a nice ball forward to the midfield to Cozy Demasiano. He had a bad pass, and it got intercepted by the Vegas captain, again, Danny Crisostomo. Crisostomo lurched forward in a counterattack, played the ball to striker Kyle Jennings, who let loose on the ball just as he was approaching the big box. Not the best shot I've ever seen, but it was enough to beat the Phoenix defense and roll into the Phoenix goal. Our goalie, Ben Lunt, he threw a small fit. I personally threw a much bigger fit. We're down 2-0 with minutes to halftime. Matt, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, besides the giveaway in the center of the field, which is becoming a reoccurring theme for this Phoenix Rising team, again, the issue on this goal was no one stepping to the ball. Kyle Jennings is not even going with pace. He's out for a nice jog in the middle of the park with the ball at his feet. And Manuel Madrid is 6-7 yards off of him with his hands behind his back. It's like he's afraid of getting handball. And Kyle Jennings does what any decent striker is going to do and just slides it into the corner. I mean, when you would invite a striker like Kyle Jennings to have that shot, they're going to have it all day. And it was just very, very poor defending again, and something that could have been probably easily shut down, or at least challenging for Las Vegas Lights, made them force a pass or something, is if Madrid would have just stepped to the ball, and he didn't. He didn't step.
Yeah. Kelly, I'm going to get to you for halftime thoughts, because we're almost to halftime. After that goal, Joey Kalistri picked up a yellow. Both sides had an attempt on goal, and after a minute of stoppage time, the ref blew the whistle. So, Kelly, it's halftime. We're down 2-0. What are your thoughts?
Well, actually, if you don't mind me backtracking really quickly, I just want to mention something about Cozy and that bad giveaway. So, you know, I do think that was really tragic. You know, people make mistakes, but we make too many mistakes, and Vegas converts mistakes. And when I saw this, it compelled me to look at the statistics. And Demasiano only has 7 passes all night. Now, as we'll find out, he gets taken off at halftime. So he has 7 passes in the first half. And that's pretty crazy. That's pretty inactive. So if you're touching the ball that infrequently, you really can't afford to be making those sloppy passes and those mistakes. But at halftime, you're pretty concerned. Obviously, you're down by 2. Vegas has dominated possession. And I think they've dominated the pace for at least 30 minutes of that first half. And of course, their goals are fairly recent at that point. You know, they're fresh as you move into the tunnel, which is always really a horrible feeling. We've got this formation that we're not really used to. It's meant to be strong defensively. It should lend itself to quick counterattacks, and you're not seeing any of that. We had 32% possession with 143 passes. This really doesn't allow Phoenix to play their game. And at this point, you're not sure they know what their game exactly is. But of that gentle possession, only 73% accuracy on those passes. And that goes down to 56% if you're in the opponent's half. Compare that to Vegas, they have 88% passing accuracy, 78% in the opponent's half. Phoenix has 7 shots, only 1 on target, and tons of turnovers, you know, as we've mentioned, just sloppiness. But the one thing I want to highlight is an interesting statistic. Vegas lost possession 70 times in the first half. Now, they had a lot of possession, so they're going to lose possession regularly, but that's a really high turnover rate. And all I can think about is, what did we do with that? When they lost possession 70 times, how did we convert that? How did we spring into action with those 5 midfielders? And we didn't. We had 7 shots, 7 crosses, and 2 corners. So I was really inspired. I'm sorry, I'll stop talking in a minute. I was really inspired watching Sacramento in the Open Cup this week, you know, embarrassingly to say, but you really see a team that knows what to do when that ball is turned over, just that crisp passes, that quick movement forward. And we just didn't see that at all from Phoenix. Thanks for letting me ramble.
Oh, good. Matt, the last 10 minutes of first half was just the worst I've ever seen Phoenix play. You talked about it, how we didn't come out. We allowed them to build up attack, and they did. And it just came again and again and again. So what are your thoughts at halftime? You know, you can take a look back or take a look forward into what you're expecting in the second half. Just over to you.
My first thoughts were, one, how do they turn this around? Who's sitting on the bench that's going to come in and provide something, not just going forward, but just something in terms of possession, something in terms of leadership. And then, you know, really the second thought I had was, has Shantz lost this side? They didn't look like a team that was fighting for much of anything. I think what's amazing, you know, Kelly, you bring up Sac Republic in this Open Cup, and they're making a historic run right now, making it to the semifinals, you know, beating some big guys, you know, just knocking off the LA Galaxy in LA. And it's a team that's fighting for each other. It's a team that's fighting for their manager. And you can just see what it means to them when that final whistle blew and that advancement to the semifinals. And I just don't see that with this team. It just looks like there's not a leader. There's not a guy pulling them together as there has been in years past, urging them to continue fighting, urging them to do better, encouraging them, calling them out. And so that's the biggest thing I was thinking at halftime, is what is even being said in this locker room right now? Because it appears that we don't have a leader, and that the coaching staff has lost them.
Okay, well, Kelly, there were 2 substitutions made at halftime. Darnell King came off, and Donaciano came off. Babacar Jai and Greg Hurst came on. What did you think about those substitutions?
I was excited about those substitutions. I mean, if you look at King coming off, that's always an interesting choice. You know, we don't know necessarily what the circumstances were regarding that, if he has an injury, if he was fatigued, or if this was just Rick Shantz continuing to throw that spaghetti at the wall and say, okay, I've now had sort of a wholesale backline change since the last match against Loudon. But That said, you're happy to see Jai on. I'm wondering if they drop back to maybe a four-back system at that point with Jai as an outside back. Maybe Kalistri dropped back. To be honest, I couldn't tell, partly due to those camera angles and just the horrible viewing experience that you have. But I was happy to see Jai on. He is a playmaker. I do think he rallies the team behind him. I feel like he's really energetic and excited, and he can make good plays. And then I was really happy to see Hurst come on, and maybe I was happy retrospectively looking back, but I do feel like Hurst is very competent. I feel like it is very difficult to shake his confidence, and he really made a change to the tenor of that forward line when he came on. That said, up to this point, the forwards are about the only people that I've been happy with. You know, I really thought that Antwi was trying his very hardest using his size, and I thought Marcus Epps, you know, he comes into better form in the second half, but he certainly was really playing for the colors. He was really doing his best. So it was nice to have Hurst join that forward line, and I think it would pay dividends.
Awesome. Well, just like they did in the first half, Phoenix came out strong in the second half too. They had renewed confidence and energy, which led to Santi Mori's first goal of the season. It came in the 55th minute, playing tight to the right touchline. Marcus Epps found himself under pressure, so he played the ball back to Aidan Quinn. Quinn chipped the ball over Epps straight down the line for Richie Antwi. Antwi's now under pressure, so he passed the ball back to Epps, who played a lovely through ball into the center for Greg Hurst, who's at the top of the area. With a beautiful first touch, Hurst gets the ball by his defender and off to his left for Santi Mori, who smashes it home. Matt, the score is now 2-1. How are you feeling?
I think you're feeling better. There's some relief. I mean, that buildup to that goal looked like vintage Phoenix Rising, what we've come to expect from them. The quickness with which the ball was being moved, the movement off the ball, the awareness of where Mowar was going to be from Hurst. I mean, it flowed well. And there was just that moment you're like, okay, maybe there's a spark, maybe something was said at halftime that they're going to be able to turn this around. And so it gave you that little glimmer of hope for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Kelly, tell us about Santi Mori's celebration.
Well, there wasn't much of one, which was a little bit sad for me. You know, I really wanted everyone to hug him. Heck, put him on the shoulders, march him off the field, throw a water balloon at him. But yeah, I mean, he just really was all business. And unfortunately, I think, you know, what Matt said about whether or not they're feeling united as a team, I immediately thought of this moment. I hadn't been thinking that way, but, you know, I really wanted everyone to rally. On the other hand, you're down, you're playing Vegas. You really just need to keep putting it in the back of the net. He does sort of do a prayer hands. And I felt like that was a bit of a nod, who knows, maybe to the good Lord or maybe to the fans, you know, and you're just hoping that the floodgates are open for Santi Mori at this point.
Yeah, it was definitely to the good Lord because, yeah.
it was called for, absolutely. But, you know, it was beautiful play, and it was nice to see Antwi, you know, really be able to hold possession and get a nice pass off under so much pressure. And again, I think Hurst, Matt mentioned he knew where Mowar was going to be. He also is just so sly, you know, with just kind of a side of the foot, no look pass. And I think he brought confidence and he brings savvy to that front line. I think they all felt it.
Great. Great. So guys, like Matt said, we've got some hope. And over the next 20 minutes, Phoenix had 6 attempts on goal, no success. We saw 2 attempts from Hurst, 2 from Quinn, and 1 apiece from Kev Lambert and Santi Mori. So it wasn't a one-sided affair. Vegas matched us shot for shot. They too had 6 attempts on goal without success. But to our dismay, the next attempt proved fatal. It came in the 76th minute. The Vegas striker, Cal Jennings, was there again. He found space close to the end line and crossed the ball into the 6 box to Danny Trejo, who was alone at the far post. It was an easy finish as Trejo nodded the ball home and put the score to 3-1. Kelly, any issues with what you saw right there?
Yes. Yes. First of all, thank you for carrying on my trend of calling it the six box. yeah, I had a lot of issues with this, and I'm really happy-go-lucky. I'm really just like, it's hard to piss me off, I think. But this play just really aggravated me. I mean, I have to have a complaint with Lambert. You know, Matt mentioned Jennings taking a jog with the ball earlier. I think that was goal number two. Well, Jennings takes a nice long run on this one. I mean, I don't even know where he's coming from, but he just undefended. No one is fazed as Cal Jennings runs to the end line. And you can't afford this. Now, I am not a coach. I don't have the best tactical knowledge. Like, you want to play zonal defense, I'm with you. But at some point, someone has to take responsibility for Cal Jennings. He doesn't get to take a jog, and he is wide open. I thought Lambert was way too slow marking him, playing him way too far off the ball. And this is what happens. I mean, it was too simple. This was an easy play. The defense lost the plot. They stopped paying attention. And I mean, that's the name of the game for defense. It is strict attention. Everything counts. Every movement matters. To let Cal Jennings take this run is nuts.
Matt, anything to add to that?
Yeah. You made mention of Danny Trejo being in the box by himself, but he wasn't. I mean, there were two Phoenix Rising players not even paying attention that there was a guy there. You had James Musa and I believe Njai, just, again, no one picking up anybody. And just like Kelly pointed out with Cal Jennings, who's kind of just taking this stroll, at some point, whatever kind of marking you're doing, there has to be communication from Njai, either letting Musa know that he needs to drop back and mark Trejo, or that he's going to step forward and mark Trejo. There's just a breakdown of communication, and that's what leads to this open header. It was an okay worked goal, but I mean, it's a goal that you're going to see week in and week out in the USL because it's just kind of standard. There was nothing really special about it besides the fact that once again, the Phoenix Rising defense let the team down and were just caught ball watching.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right. He was not alone in the box. He just looked like he was alone in the box because he's the only one that went for the ball. Guys, 3 minutes after ahead, Kelly.
I just want to pile on. Can we also just like be tactically aware enough that these two players link up? Like, that's what they do. So, I mean, you have to be overly cautious when you've got these two players. They've only been on the field together for a couple of minutes. I think Trejo was on the bench the whole first half. So this is something you have to be watching out for. They love to link up. Like, it's not inappropriate to play really tightly to these players while they're together in your third.
Kelly, while I've got you, I've got a question for you. We saw a substitution minutes later. Antwi was replaced by Joey Farrell. So this is Antwi, one of our strikers, being replaced by our center back, Joey Farrell. What was this meant to achieve?
I don't know. And I'd like to have Matt weigh in on this too. I mean, when it happened in the moment, I was like, what is our plan? Are we trying to hold on to our loss? Like, why are we putting an extra defender on here? Rather than focusing on scoring. But then he seemed to play, it seemed to be an actual, you know, like for like exchange here. I mean, he played forward. So my only guess is that Joey Farrell loves to use his head. He is fairly effective in the air. You know, we see him on set pieces, come up high and go for those header attempts. That's my best guess. I don't think it's appropriate, however. I don't care how good you are in the air in the final third. Antwi is a striker who was proving himself. I thought he was playing really well. I thought he was confusing the defense using his size, but I'd like to know what Matt thought.
Yeah, Matt, is this more spaghetti against the wall?
I don't know if this is throwing spaghetti against the wall as much as this is the Hail Mary pass equivalent of soccer.
Right.
He was now down two goals. You're talking 78th minute. What are we going to do? Well, I'm looking down my bench. I have Delgado. I have Channing Chasten, who's maybe still coming back from injury. And even though he was a forward in college, we've moved him to a fullback position. I have Flood, who's a fullback. I have Haugli, who's a center back and, you know, defensive mid. And then I have Joey Farrell. And I think this was just a, oh, crap moment. I have to do something. And so he throws in Farrell, and Kelly nailed it on the head. Farrell never dropped past midfield. He wasn't coming on to play defense. He wasn't coming on to make sure this didn't turn into a 4-5-6-1 game. He came on to play striker. And I think that just shows you where we're at as a team, as far as our depth goes. Maybe, you know, the thing that bugs me about the USL is we don't know why Repetto wasn't there. We don't know why Sejas isn't there. We don't know why this player, all we're told is lower body injury. All we're told is this is what's happening. And yet now we're stuck with Farrell, who is a guy for me that kind of represents most what it means to play for this team. He fights for this badge every time he has the shirt on. And so he's going to do whatever Shant tells him to do. But I think he just was just put into a lose-lose situation. And this really showed that our strategy went from trying to have the ball, trying to make passes, to let's just get it out wide and lob it into the box, hoping that Farrell or Hurst can get ahead on it. And you see for the next 12 minutes plus stoppage time, that just never happens. We never really looked like we were going to threaten their goal.
Right. Well, just to get back to the flow of the game. So we had that Vegas goal. And then 3 minutes after that, we did get one back. Joey Calistri beat his man in midfield and sent the ball forward to Epps on the right wing, who worked his way into the half space. He beat two Vegas defenders and centered the ball perfectly for Aidan Quinn, who with a lovely first touch, tucked the ball into the left side of goal. Kelly, what was your feeling on that play?
I was excited about it. You know, it was a nice pass from Calistri, who was under pressure. And, you know, I thought it was also reflective of Epps, who, you know, and how he played the whole match. He really came alive in the second half. You saw great footwork from him. You saw perfect weight on this ball. And he deserved it. You know, this felt to me a little bit like someone who is going to blossom, for lack of a better term, in the moment, with more time on the pitch. You know, he hasn't gotten the minutes that maybe he deserves, or maybe the minutes that he needs to get more comfortable. So that was really cool. And then Quinn's 40th, right? So Welcome to the club, and thanks for making that run.
Right. Well, the score at this point is 3-2. We didn't see any more goals, but we saw three more yellow cards. Lambert, Musa, and Farrell each picked up a yellow card, and there were none given to the other side. Matt, does that tell you anything about how we were playing in those final minutes?
It was just frustration. You know, this team was being outplayed. And as a player, when that's happening, when you're trying to fight back a goal down, and you know, Vegas is utilizing some of the dark arts of soccer, you know, some of the time wasting techniques, and you know, they have every right to do that. They're in control. They've played the game they came to play. And I think you just see the frustration of the rising players, and it results in some yellow cards, because as we see, most USL refs aren't able to control the flow of the game as much as refs at other levels.
Right. Kelly, over to you to just maybe summarize your thoughts of that second half.
I guess, you know, hand me a yellow card, because frustration is kind of the name of the game. You know, on one hand, I did see some improvement. We talked about Hurst giving some confidence to that forward line, and that was bright. You know, we did see some nice play with the forwards. It was exciting to see Quinn get back on the scoreboard. He had some impressive numbers. You know, if we talk about stats in a little bit, we can talk about that, but he did pretty well. But yeah, it was a little bit too little and a little bit too late. And, you know, in fairness, I think Vegas is a team that we have a hard time playing against anyway. Their style is hard for us to defend against and to play against. So honestly, I don't think it was the worst second half that we've seen. I do think there were bright spots that could be celebrated, but, you know, when you're down, it's hard for us to come back, especially with the challenges that we've had in the final third and with finishing.
Yeah, Matt, we scored two goals to their one, but it wasn't enough. What are your thoughts on that second half?
You know, I mean, it's just got to be more questioning of why do we as a team have to go down two goals before there's any sort of fight, any sort of spark? We saw this, you know, with Loudon. We've seen this at other times. And it's frustrating. I don't know what's not clicking. You know, I don't know if you guys listened to Sean's pregame comments. You know, from what you have to take at face value, from what he says, they're working hard in training. They're trying to work on all these things. They're doing everything possible. And so something's not clicking from the training ground to the game pitch. And they got to figure it out, because as of right now, we're 7-9, zero draws. We're sitting third to bottom in our conference outside of the playoff pictures. And we don't have a lot of time here to turn things around. At minimum, this team should be making the playoffs at minimum. And so anything less than that is unacceptable.
Absolutely. Okay, guys, the score then was 3-2. So let's take a look at how each part of the field did. So with our defensive unit, Kelly, did anybody stand out? Did we have any standouts in our defensive play?
Standouts in a bad way?
I'm thinking of a good way.
That was a joke. No one stood out for me. I thought as a whole, you know, letting in three goals is too many. We've talked about pretty much everything that went wrong. And I think there's just too many errors. Some of that may come from that failure of consistency, you know, in terms of who's on the pitch and how they're playing together. I will say, you know, could there be some people that are still returning to full fitness? Like, I thought Musa's passing accuracy was a little bit too low. He was at 72%. He lost more duels than he won. I wouldn't want to pick anyone out and say, oh, Musa played poorly. But, you know, when you look at it like that and you don't have anyone that is rising up and looking great, then what you're looking at is just who wasn't in full form, you know, who's making too many errors. And unfortunately, I think you could point the finger at almost everyone on the pitch.
Okay. Well, into the midfields, Matt, were there any bright spots in the midfield?
You know what? I mean, just with everything that happened, I think you have to point out Aiden Quinn. I think he played relatively well in a team that just did not look good. He played well, and then Moore getting his first goal. I wouldn't necessarily say that was a outstanding performance he put in, but he did put in work. He was running and he got his goal. So, but for me, it was definitely Aiden Quinn in the midfield.
Great. Up to the forwards, Kelly, Marcus Epps, Richie Antwi, and if you want to throw in Hurst in there because he came in at halftime.
Yeah, I thought Antwi and Epps were both great. As I mentioned, I was impressed with them. You know, again, I think finding your vibe with one another does take time. And we saw that kind of come into greater fruition as we moved through the match. But I thought they both worked really hard. We saw Epps kind of gain in his confidence and get more dangerous. And his passing accuracy was pretty much better than almost anyone on the Rising team at 85%. And he had a decent number of passes as well. He also had three successful crosses. I think he had two unsuccessful crosses, but it felt like he was doing, you know, a lot of work on the ball as well as creating these chances. I mean, he created five chances and he had an assist. So he really stood out for me. He also, by the way, had four tackles and four clearances. So he was putting up numbers offensively and defensively. And then as I mentioned, and I think Hurst changed kind of the tenor of that attack. He really impresses me. I hate to always use the term composure, but he just looks like someone that belongs with the ball at his feet. He's clever. He knows where his players are. And I do think that's leadership.
Yeah. And he's just great in tight spaces. I think this is the best we've seen from Marcus Epps. And if we could see this consistency, Matt, I feel like we could turn things around. What do you think?
Yeah, I think Epps is really coming into form. And as Kelly pointed out, if he just gets some more game time behind him, get some more positive touches on the ball, score some more goals, I think that he's going to really kind of grow into that player that we need him to be. I mean, it's unfortunate that this is what we're saying, but he kind of was brought in to be Solo's replacement. Mm-hmm. And so those are big boots to fill. And it's something we just got to give him time and team growing into. But I was very impressed out of that whole team. I was very impressed with him yesterday. He looked up for it, especially in the second half.
Awesome. Awesome. All right, Kelly, let's close it out with some closing comments and maybe you look forward and look into your crystal ball and tell us what you might do or what we can expect.
Well, and I don't really have a lot to add. Honestly, thank you for letting me be so opinionated and verbose throughout this roundup. But, you know, I think this was a tough loss. It was a disappointing loss. But as I mentioned, I think Vegas has actually proven to be a pretty good team. I don't know if people are like throwing eggs at me as they listen, but, you know, they do have a lot of danger on that counterattack. They've got some great forwards. You know, they've got Trejo. I think he's tied for third in terms of the most goals scored in the USL. And they're doing really well defensively. So, you know, as much as we wanted to come back and beat Vegas, it's always challenging for us. So it was a disappointing loss, but I don't think it's the worst one that we've seen recently. And we just need to get people into full fitness as well. I mean, we need to see Lambert fully fit, you know, and rested after his international duty. We need Musa healthy. We need to see Rodriguez and Sejas healthy and back on the pitch, and we need to build that chemistry. I think Matt kind of alluded to this, but for me, I think we need to say, okay, we tried the three back system and it's not for us, because I do not love that look. But you know, the schedule for the foreseeable future is just nasty. I mean, we will continue to be tested. We don't have any easy games, and no games have proven to be easy for us. So we really need to pick up points somewhere. Maybe the easiest opportunity is the next one at home against OC. They're going to be coming off a midweek game. They're not good. So hopefully we'll pick up points. And in so doing, we will pick up some confidence and maybe we'll turn some things around. That's my hope.
Matt, over to you for the final word.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. Kelly, I'm interested to see what the atmosphere is like on Saturday at Wild Horse Pass. It's a huge game. You know, we're not looking well at all. And this is going to really, I think, be a defining moment for Phoenix on July 2nd. If things don't turn around, if OC comes out and gets a win here at our stadium, I think you're going to see a transition in the club, and hopefully maybe it's a spark to turn things around either way, but it's a big game.
Awesome. So guys, Phoenix Rising will play Vegas for a third time on August 6th. This time it'll be in Phoenix. Guys, this has been great. Matt, thank you for coming on the show and sharing your insights.
Thank you.
Awesome. Kelly, it's great talking football with you. Thanks for coming on.
Hey, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
This is Rick Shantz, the head coach of Phoenix Rising, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, it's the end of June. Time to check in with Dominic Kearns for a monthly roundup and have a look ahead to see what's in store for July. Dom, it's great to have you on. Welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, I'm happy to be here. Obviously, it hasn't been a great month, so things could be better, but
sure.
You know, we're alive, we're talking about it, we're getting through it, so.
Yeah, and it's a rough situation for the fans to be in. It's a rough situation for everybody involved in the club. What's your take just on the big picture?
Everyone has had different emotions on this winless month, on this 0-point month. Before we get into the nitty gritty, I just kind of wanted to spread some positivity today. You know, even though our team is struggling, there's no need for fans to turn on other fans. People have the right to different opinions, whether it's, you know, should Rick Shantz stay for the rest of the season or should he go? Whether it's, you know, are we satisfied with the ownership right now or a little bit less than satisfied? Regardless of differences on opinion, we don't need to tear each other down, because that's only going to create a worse environment. And I think also let's really be appreciative of all the people behind the scenes that are working for Phoenix Rising. The operations staff, you know, people like Jose Bosch, who runs the social media account, mm-hmm. Ashley Oriana, who does the photography for the team, all the ticket representatives. It cannot be ideal times to be doing those jobs when the team is struggling in form. So really, when you have a chance, you know, just reach out, tell them you appreciate what they're doing, and let's just try to have some positivity, even though the results have not been that positive.
I love it, Dom. I absolutely love it. Totally agree with you. Okay, so are you ready for the monthly roundup? This is not going to be easy for us.
Well, we got to just dive into it. Let's do it.
Okay. All right, so here's the deal. In March, we had 3 games. We had 1 win, 2 losses. In April, we had 4 games, 4 wins. In May, we had 5 games, 2 wins, 3 losses. And that brings us up to date for June. So how do we do in June?
I think everyone knows at this point, everyone who's listening, no wins, no draws, and 4 losses. All of those losses by 1 goal, which just adds a little bit more venom to the sting.
Absolutely. And where does this put us as far as the standings goes?
So it has us dropped down to 11th place in the Western Conference. This season, only the top 7 in the conference make it. I know in past seasons, you know, there were 8 teams making it. There was even 10 teams making it one season. It's only the top 7 this year. So that's something to keep in mind. We are on 21 points with 16 matches played. That puts us 4 points behind the last playoff team now, which is Las Vegas Lights.
Okay. So I've heard, or you know, it's pretty easy to see if you look at the difference between the Eastern Conference and the Western Conference, that the Western Conference is a lot tighter. So I've seen on social media, people have said, you know, it's game over. The season's gone. You know, we might make it into the playoffs. But, you know, what's the reality? Do you think we'll make it into the playoffs? Is there a chance for us to make it into the playoffs?
The way they're playing right now, no, we're not going to make the playoffs. Does that mean the season is over? No. At this point, we still have 18 matches left to play, so slightly more than half the season remaining. But we're seeing some huge red flags, and it's really comprehensive over this last month. We've lost matches where it was a defensive struggle and we couldn't put the ball in the back of the net. And we've lost matches where our defense was getting shredded. And even though the offense put some goals on the board, it still wasn't enough. So we're going to need to see some serious changes, whether that's with the head coach or just with a difference in the players' performance, if we want to even talk about playoffs right now.
Gotcha. And just before we leave standings, just to put it in perspective, do you remember where we were this time last month at the end of May, where we were in the standings?
Yeah. So at the end of May, we were in 4th place in the Western Conference. And I believe we were either tied for 3rd or 1 point back of 3rd with a match in hand. Obviously, that is no longer the case. But the gap between 3rd place in the conference and us is only 7 points, which is absolutely something that could be made up over the remainder of the season. We're just going to have to see some comprehensive changes if that's going to be a reality.
Great. Okay. So on to notable statistics. So Dom, you brought this up back in March when you looked at goals difference, goals against. You looked in April, you looked at possession, and we had a chat about that. In May, you talked about how it was just starting to become evident that we were not dominating other teams in the way that we were used to with an older version of Phoenix Rising. You also talked about possession. You talked about the number of red cards, that we had 3 reds in the first 3 league games of the month. That was Darnell King, Babacar Jai, and Joey Farrell all picked up reds. That was pretty amazing. So what have you been noticing for June?
Yeah, so I was just thinking about, you know, what to reflect on. And, you know, obviously it's at the forefront when you concede 7 goals in the last 2 matches. But I was looking at our goal difference, and in particular our goals against. And Phoenix Rising has conceded 34 goals in 16 matches this year. And, you know, perhaps we only give up 2 or 3 against New Mexico if we don't have the Baby Birds out there. That would still put us tied. Say we only conceded 3 in that match with a regular lineup, that would still put us tied for 5th worst in goals against in the league. But as it stands, with us conceding 34 goals in 16 matches, that's more than 2 goals conceded per match. It's very difficult to win a soccer match when you're conceding 2 goals a game. You have to score 3, and that's just an impossibility with our offensive form right now. So, I mean, the only teams that have conceded more goals this season are Atlanta United 2, which has conceded 39. But is that a huge surprise? And Monterey Bay, who is an expansion team, they've just really been struggling. They've conceded 37. That's it. Those are the only teams that have conceded more than us. You know, again, if you say, okay, the New Mexico 7-0 was exaggerated, say we've only conceded 30, that would still put us, you know, tied for fifth in most goals conceded. And another note, if you look at the playoff teams in both conferences, the highest goals conceded is 25. So we've given up 9 more goals than the next highest playoff team in USL.
Wow.
That's a huge problem.
Huge.
And if you think about it, you know, Phoenix Rising has achieved its greatest successes when it's been a defensive stalwart. You know, in 2018, before Rick Shantz came in, Patrice Carterone was really hell-bent on establishing a defensive identity. And we were consistently among the top 2 or 3 best defensive teams in our conference. Even 2019, we had such a high caliber of player. We were shutting teams out regularly during that win streak. The defense really had continued to be at least top 2 or 3 in the Western Conference up until this season. I mean, so this is a huge departure from what we've come to expect. And again, when you lose a player like Asante, it just makes it that much more difficult to score 3-4 goals in a match. You really shouldn't be relying on scoring 3 or 4 goals in a match to win.
Right.
But that's where we're at right now.
Right. Wow. Okay, fantastic. Dom, let's roll it on to our next segment where we talk about the games. So we had 4 league games. You want to talk us through them, starting with us with the game on June 4th, where we played at home against Birmingham Legion.
Yeah, so let's get right into it. The first match of the month was at home to Birmingham Legion. Arguably our best performance of the month of June. We actually outpossessed them 55% to 45%, 84% passing accuracy. There were a lot of good things in that match, particularly in the first half. And this is one of the few matches this season where we were unlucky to not come away with a result. I truly believe we deserved at least a draw from that match. But, I mean, that's the way it goes sometimes. You could argue that maybe we didn't deserve a couple wins if you look at the match as a whole. Earlier in the season, when Ben Lute was making some incredible saves, well, this one, you know, we did everything but put the ball in the back of the net. And then in the second half, Prosper Kasim gets a low shot that perhaps Lute could have done better, but it did take a tricky hop and kind of a sucker punch goal. And then after that, the wind really fell out of our sails, and we were struggling to create a huge response.
Yeah,
just a tough one. I mean, really. You saw some good things. They were trying to build off the Hartford win the week before. And there were some positives in that match. So it just felt really disappointing to see a 1-0 loss.
Yeah, absolutely. And the team were pretty ecstatic about the win on that night. It was huge for them to get a win against Phoenix Rising away from home. And afterwards, their manager talked about how he felt that they were really lucky to come away with that win. Okay, let's move on to the next game of the month, which was June the 11th, where it was the second home game of the month where we took on El Paso Locomotive.
Yep, and this one, you know, a lot of the same talking points. I think the defense did better. The offense came out with some hunger in the first half and really created a couple very strong chances. Joey Calistri hit the right post early in the first half. There were a couple chances that just barely missed. I think in the second half he had a header, a free header that he missed. So not an ideal game for him, but the chances were being created. And even though this game we weren't dominating the possession, it still felt like we were going blow for blow with them. And that all changes when Madrid picks up a red card. In the 68th minute, El Paso gets a penalty. Aaron Gomez puts it in. And at that point, we tried to muster a response, but it was too little too late. And we fell 1-0. Yeah. And I was at that match, too. That was a tough one. I was really at that point, like, still very excited about, you know, going there, knowing that week that the boys needed extra support to get a W, because I know they still had been struggling with form and stuff. And just very unfortunate that once again, it resulted in a home loss. And very rarely have we seen back-to-back home losses in the modern Phoenix Rising era. So,
yeah, for sure. And towards the end of that game, El Paso played one of their academy players, a 15-year-old academy player. And I thought that was really curious, that the game wasn't over by any means. And why would they put on one of their 15-year-old academy players? Is it just to give him a chance? Was their coach, Hutch, trying to, you know, prove a point? Hey, we're that good now that we can start fielding our academy players. And it turns out that that wasn't the case at all, that they were actually very short-handed, that they were barely able to make a roster, and they had to get some academy players on that night. So, you know, looking back at that, that's pretty amazing to think that they didn't have their strongest team. They had players away, they had players out injured. And that's what I was saying coming up to this, that we were hurting because of our injuries, because we were missing players. And now we're taking on a team that's in the same situation, and they managed to beat us at home. So that kind of made me nervous going into the next game, which was June 18th, where we played away to Loudoun United FC. So tell us about that game, Dom.
Yeah, and I guess one real quick thought on those first two home matches. I think a lot of the frustration from those results stems from the fact that going into those matches, neither of those teams was, you know, top of the table in amazing form. El Paso had definitely been improving, but going into both of those matches, we were higher on points than our opponent. So they were matches you would expect, especially at home. At the very minimum, you need to draw, but really you should be winning both of those. And I think a lot of people, myself included, were fairly understanding about May, with just a true injury bug, with the Open Cup still going on. But then for those results to happen at the start of the month, I think that's where the tide started to turn. And we'll get to that later, but let's go to the Loudoun match now.
Awesome.
Yeah, so this one, in a difference from what we've been seeing lately, Phoenix actually comes out with the first goal of the match. A great interception in the midfield. And then Babu, I think, starts the attack. Ultimately, I don't know who played the ball. And it actually was trying to play the ball to Repetto, but it went through to Aiden Quinn, who then puts a great finish in, not from the easiest angle, to put us up 1-0 in the ninth minute. And you're thinking against a Loudoun team that only had 3 wins on the season, 1 win since March. Here we go. You know, this is exactly what the doctor ordered. We're going to build on this lead. We're going to bounce back with a win.
Right. Here comes the goal fest. That's exactly what I was thinking.
And it didn't happen. I mean, for the next 10 or 15 minutes, you know, Phoenix still looked fairly comfortable, but you really want to build on that advantage when you're not in ideal form. Like that's how we were able to get the Hartford win, is we were able to put 2 goals in the net back to back and put pressure on them throughout the rest of the half. It just really sent a message when you can get multiple goals in a short time like that. Unfortunately, we weren't able to add to that lead. And then, oh man, their 17-year-old kid with quite a name.
Yeah.
Abakura. It's I'm going to butcher the first name. Abdelatif Abakura had a pretty nice goal in the 32nd minute to tie it up. Could the marking have been a little stronger, perhaps? But definitely frustrating to concede that. And then you go into the half 1-1. And really, you're not sure how it's going to play out. And then obviously I think we played fairly well the first 10 minutes. We're creating some chances. Babu put a couple chances near the goal. I think one from distance that the keeper saved and another one from an angle that just went wide of the post. But again, because we aren't clinical, Loudoun makes us pay. Abakura has a really nice finish in the 58th minute from a tough angle to put them up 2-1. And then what's a little bit more inexcusable, in my opinion, is conceding a second goal 1 minute later. And really, it was just an open man in the box. Our defense collapsed in Abakura on the right wing. So Sami Khedira is open, basically as a free shot, he hits it. And then at that point, you're down 3-1. It's going to be a huge mountain to climb. And adding insult to injury was their fourth goal, which took a wicked deflection. It was, I think, technically credited to Tyler Freeman, but took a brutal deflection. And Loon would have been there for the save. And that ends up really biting us because we are able to fight back at the end for two goals. But it's not quite enough. Ends up being 4-3. Yeah. But it's tough because this is another match where there actually were a couple positives. It was one of, if not the best, performance from Aiden Quinn in a Phoenix Rising uniform. With a brace and the cross that led to an own goal. Basically putting the Pride Razor on his back to raise some money for deserving communities there. And then, you know, he scored in the last match too. So really he contributed 4 of the 5 goals this month.
Wow.
And then Babu, probably his best match with Phoenix Rising too. Unlucky to not get on the score sheet.
Yeah, absolutely. So moving into the next game, we had a midweek presser with the coach and with 3 of the team. So videos were released where the press asked questions and they responded. And something that stuck in my mind is that one of them said that we've seen Phoenix Rising come out and play really strong for 10 minutes and then kind of fall apart, and then play really strong for 10 minutes and then fall apart again. And as we move into the next game, this was the Vegas game on June 24th. I feel like those 10 minute stretches became 5 minute stretches. Just, it surprised me. You know, I was expecting that we'd be picking things up for this game, but it just didn't happen. So talk us through that one, Dom.
You probably hit on it already in the recap, so I won't go too deep, but you know, right off the bat, we get a great chance off a set piece. Quinn puts the ball in. I didn't see who got the header, but honestly, it kind of looked like the ball went over the line. But the assistant referee didn't call it a goal, and you know, we're unable to get that early goal, and of course Vegas ends up taking advantage. We take our foot off the gas a little bit, and they get 2 goals. The first one is honestly a great finish. It was pretty decent marking, and Alvaro Quezada just ripped one in the top corner. Nothing Ben can do about it. Really just a great shot, and that's tough.
Yeah.
But then the second and third goals for them leave a lot more to be desired. Cal Jennings having too much space on the second goal, and then later in the match, Trejo being unmarked on a back post run, that's just completely inexcusable. This dude, you know, is already in MLS. He is one of the leading scorers in USL this season. How are you leaving him unmarked? But unfortunately, we have seen those kinds of defensive lapses fairly consistently this year.
Yeah.
And that renders, you know, Santi Moar with a good finish and Quinn getting another goal. Those are great contributions, but ultimately it's still not enough.
Right.
One thing I do want to say, allowing Las Vegas to have over 60% possession against us is embarrassing. That is, I don't care what their style is, what our style is. You cannot let Las Vegas Lights get 61% possession. And I think it was like 65% in the first half. That's, I don't care what excuses you have, that is just straight up unacceptable.
Yeah, that's hard to believe. So, Dom, that's the month in review there with 4 games. And going into this, you and I talked about how it wouldn't be crazy for us to expect to win all of these games. as you said, we were higher in the standings than these teams, you know, before we met them. And it's just crazy that we fell to them four times in a row. So let's look ahead to July. What have we got in store for July?
Well, on paper, July looks like a very tough month. We start out with a winnable match at home next Saturday against Orange County. Anything less than a win in that match, if you weren't already panicking, that's cause for full panic. There's no way around it. You have to find a way. This is one of the few teams that's been in similar form to us and is lower on the table. And this is going to be our most winnable match of the month. So we need to find a way to get 3 points, because then we get into the really tough stretch of games. So Saturday, July 9th, away to Memphis, who, if you haven't been familiar with Memphis this year, this has been their best season in USL. They're actually atop the Eastern Conference standings on 35 points already. That's actually putting them with the most points in the league right now. So that's going to be a gauntlet. Louisville City on national TV on July 20th. That'll be an ESPN match. And I mean, that rematch against Amadou Dia, former Rising player. This will actually be the first time we've played him in a competitive match since he left us. And while you'd love to see a result there, I don't think you can really expect it given right. our form and given their form. Because Louisville is number two in the East. You know, they're at 33 points.
Yeah.
And their home form has been amazing this year.
And then, just to make it a little more difficult, Dom, that's a midweek game.
Right. Midweek, cross country, mm-hmm. playing one of the best teams in the league, knowing that 3 days later we have to host Sac Republic, who, that is always a physical, chippy, tough match, regardless of where we're playing, what competition we're playing. That's always a draining match. So, you know, you've got to find a way to at least get a draw out of that. But it's not going to be easy.
No, did you see them playing their Open Cup game against LA Galaxy?
Yeah, that's a great story. I mean, getting all the way to the semifinals of the Open Cup. And then they'll host the semifinal against Sporting Kansas City. It's the first time that a lower division team has made the Open Cup semis since 2017. So that's awesome. And honestly, like, good value on the win too. I don't feel like it was a fluky result.
I agree. They deserved it.
Yeah. So, you know, that's just phenomenal to see. Also, just going to point it out, we could have had that exact same path if we'd beaten them.
Right.
That's just in the back of my head is like, oh man, it's, you know, kind of like a, not that I'm speaking from experience here, but you know, if an ex broke up with you and then they're doing all their things in life, and you're sitting there saying, man, that could have been me.
That's an analogy I've never heard before, but I like it.
That's tough, man. I mean, how crazy would it have been to host a semifinal match in the Open Cup?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. All right. Well good luck, Sacramento Republic.
Well, one thing I will say, though, that could benefit us. I looked it up, and Sacramento Republic is hosting that semifinal match on July 27th. So that's actually just 4 days after we host them. So I think we would likely be going against a rotated squad. They're going to want to rest up their big boys for the Open Cup. So if anything, maybe we rotate against Louisville City and just focus on beating a Western Conference opponent. I mean, I don't know. Those are the decisions above my pay grade. But we close out the month with a couple interesting ones. Away to Oakland Roots on July 27th. And that'll be a fun rematch against Juan Guerra, who was a longtime assistant here. Good on him for getting the job over there. He has Oakland just outside the playoff places right now. They are in eighth place with 24 points. Playoffs very much within their reach still. So that'll be a big match for both teams. big match for us because it's going to be us going against one of those other teams that's fighting for playoff seeding. And then finish out the month at home against Colorado Springs. And once again, this is the team on top of the West right now. I guess San Antonio now is 1 point ahead of them because they won the match this weekend. But yeah, 33 points with just 14 matches played. That's who we have to go up against at the end of the month. So, I mean, if you look at it, we have six matches, including four matches in the final 11 days of the month. And three of those six are against the top three teams in USL this year.
Oh, my God. Wow.
You got to beat OC. I mean, realistically, any points out of Memphis and Louisville away are good points. You could probably – I think you really have to put a lot of emphasis in beating Sac Republic against a rotated Republic squad. And then, I mean, if you could find a way – so basically beat OC and Sac at home, and then if you could manage three other points out of those remaining four, I'll call that a good month. It would at least keep us in the mix. So I'll say 9 points from those six matches. But I don't know if we're going to get that.
Gotcha. It's going to be interesting, Dom.
Yeah, it certainly slates as our toughest month of the season on paper.
Yeah, for sure. So, Dom, on a personal note, you work as a mortgage broker. So how's life in the real world?
Yeah, I mean, actually some good developments there. I'm working on a couple loans right now. One family had a sub-600 FICO, but we were able to find a creative solution, get them under contract. I was able to help my mother-in-law close on her townhouse. It's actually going to be the first time she's a homeowner, so it's very exciting.
Awesome.
And working with someone else, too, that we've been in contact for months, and that'll close next month, too. So some good things happening. If you have any questions, if you're interested in buying, the market's starting to change a little bit. Conditions are becoming more favorable for buyers. You're not having to offer 20, 30, 50 over ask anymore. And we're seeing fewer offers per property. So if you are interested in buying, this actually isn't the worst time. So definitely reach out. You can reach me at 714-653-3381. And I'd be happy to help. But I think before we end this, I think we were going to talk a little bit about, because we're almost halfway through the season, let's reflect a little bit.
For sure.
What are your thoughts on how the season has gone to date? And what do you think about some of the bigger issues that people are talking about? Like, you know, what's your thoughts on Rick Shantz?
Yeah.
Some people are talking about the ownership and general manager. What are your thoughts on some of that?
Yeah. Obviously, it's an absolute shocker to be where we are. We all agree on that. What the problems are, well, I've talked about that with different people and kind of got the same answer that it was the players being injured, the players not being up to par, or new players coming in that weren't living up to expectations. For example, Marcus Epps. But he played an absolute stormer in that game against Las Vegas. So yeah, maybe he's coming into
play. That was a great match for him.
Yeah, absolutely. We saw Babacar Jai. You mentioned him. He had a phenomenal game against Loudon. So I'd love to see those players coming into form. Obviously, we had no luck going our way. We had bad reffing decisions. And then you're looking at the coach. So I'm not going to make a judgment call on Rick Shantz, but just looking at it from the perspective of, could a new coach coming in make the difference? So what I've heard on social media, or what I've read on social media, is people saying that, well, it's not just about the tactics, and it's not just about the formation, it's about the locker room, and a coach needs to be able to change that. But honestly, I'm not in the locker room, so I don't know that it's worth talking about that unless you're in there and unless you can say, hey, things are bad in the locker room. With the presser that we saw with those three videos during the week with Joey Farrell, Santi Moore, and I think it was Aidan Quinn, like I didn't get a sense that things were bad in the locker room. I thought that they were coming out saying, we've had a tough run. We need a boost in confidence. We've lost some confidence, but we're going to keep pushing. And so what can you do as the 12th man? And that's what we are. We're the 12th man. What can we do? I think we can get behind our team. We can rally our team. Go ahead.
It's a great question. And everyone's going to react in different ways. One thing I will say is you saw Carl Wazitzki come out yesterday to quote tweet. I think Owain got a video of a post-game reaction, him asking Rick Shantz, you know, how long is it going to take for things to improve? And Rick Shantz straight out coming up and saying, I have two more years on my contract. And then talking once again about, you know, the players aren't executing. We're doing everything we can. Ultimately, some of these players aren't stepping up. Even if that is objectively true, I really don't like the optics of pinning things on the players when things aren't going well. I want to be coaching later in life. I plan on being a coach later in life. And I do think that a better way to approach it would be, look, we all need to find ways to get better, myself included. Because you can't point at 16 matches, and in almost all of those matches, we've seen these inconsistent stretches of play. Mm-hmm. And you can't just pin that on players. I think that's a little unfair, and a little bit of humility goes a long way. But that was interesting that Carl quote tweeted it, because I think that's the first time that, you know, a player or an ex-player had come out and said something that's not supportive of Rick.
Right. Okay. Very interesting. I think on that, it's long been said that if the team wins, then it's on the players. If the team loses, then it's on the coach. So you can definitely make that argument that the coach needs to take more responsibility. So Dom, anything else before we leave it at that?
So personally, and again, everyone can have different opinions on this. I'm not here to discredit any opinions. I'm not here to, you know, discredit anyone who reacts differently to the situation. But I think just objectively, when you look at the results this season, it's not good enough. Losing twice to Las Vegas in a season, that's something that's never happened in our franchise history. Losing to Loudoun United, a team that was playing majority kids who can't legally drink, you've never seen results like that before. And if you do see a result that's a little eyebrow raising, in all the past seasons, they've been able to bounce back. We haven't seen this bad of a run of form, I mean, since the Arizona United days, although I think Mike Vanderplas was saying even in those times, there wasn't a stretch of 7 losses in 8 matches. Cool. So, I mean, I have no ill will towards Rick. I think he's a good person. He's given us some of our best stretches in franchise history. But, you know, it at the end of the day, it is a business, and you have to just objectively look at the results. And it's not unprecedented. I mean, Frank Vogel, the coach of the Lakers in basketball, won a championship in 2020, and he got fired less than 2 years later. In American football, Mike McCarthy wins a Super Bowl with the Packers. He gets fired during the regular season after they lost to the Cardinals. These things do happen, and if you feel like the direction of the team, it's just not where it needs to be, then sometimes you got to make that decision. I mean, that's just my 2 cents on it. But again, I'm not saying, you know, people who defend Rick still are wrong. It's just, you know, I think a lot of the fan base is not seeing these results as acceptable.
Gotcha. Well, we can certainly hope that our team turns around and that we'll have a more positive conversation this time next month. Dom, I really want to thank you for coming on and giving us the monthly update. Have a fantastic week, and I look forward to having you back next month for another chat.
Thanks. And you know, parting thing, let's, even if we do disagree on aspects of the team, let's not tear each other down. There's, at the end of the day, we're all Phoenix Rising fans. We all want this team to win. Maybe we have different visions of how that's going to happen, but there truly is no reason to get negative with each other. I just don't see how that benefits anything at all. So let's try to be positive and make the most out of what we have. We've been spoiled for a while.
Absolutely. And I appreciate you saying that. Absolutely. All right. Thank you so much, Dom. Appreciate you.
Yep. Have a good one.
This is Josh Eastern, play-by-play broadcaster for your Phoenix Rising, and you are listening to The Fan Experience.
John Morrissey is back with his weekly segment on news and results from around the league that matter to Phoenix Rising fans. One of those fans is our friend in the Rising community on Facebook, Luis Garcia. Luis runs a mobile detailing business in Phoenix. He offers everything from a basic wash to an interior shampoo, paint corrections, ceramic coatings, and engine bay cleaning. If you feel like supporting your friends in the Rising community, you can reach out to Luis, that's Luis Garcia, on Facebook or on Instagram, where his handle is @GarciaDetailingPHX. If you have any Phoenix Rising friends who have a small business that would like a free ad on this show, have them email me, thefanexperiencefc@gmail.com. Now let's get back to the show. John Morrissey from USL Tactics. It's great to have you on. Take it away, John.
Well, thanks for having me. Really a packed week. Big results across the league in the Open, obviously. So I think we'll start there with that Tuesday night match where Sacramento took on Los Angeles Galaxy of the Major League Soccer. I mean, Chicharito got into the game, if that tells you anything about the scope here. And Sacramento pulled off the upset. They did exactly what they needed to do tactically, and they'll be in the semifinals facing off against Sporting Kansas City next month, which is incredibly exciting for the league and especially for the really great fan base in Sacramento. The next day at midweek, Tulsa debuted with their new interim manager, and they were roundly defeated 2-0 by a really good Memphis side who got midfielder Leston Paul back after missing a lot of time. Then Friday was stacked with games of very high import. Obviously, Phoenix had whatever happened there go down, but Colorado Springs and San Antonio faced off in what I think most people would rightly consider a game between the best two teams in the entirety of the USL. It ended up being a cagey chess match sort of affair. San Antonio got the 1-0 win off of an own goal, and they grew into the game as it went on. They're a team that's able to sit back, hold you off defensively, and strike on the counter, and that was largely how they tried to play this one out. As we moved into the Saturday slate of action, there was one matinee game that was again on ESPN, getting the whole national broadcast. And that was Louisville City taking on Hartford. Louisville won that game 2-0 amidst a spate of injuries, players in positions that they're a little bit less comfortable with, but nonetheless, Louisville doing Louisville things. After the game, interestingly, Hartford's manager, Harry Watling, stepped away from the club. Hartford hasn't had the most successful season, but Watling cited family issues back home in England. So all the best to him, certainly. And it'll be interesting to see what Hartford does in the long term. With another all-East matchup, Pittsburgh was demolished 5-2 at home by the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Pittsburgh is just struggling really badly right now. Meanwhile, if you're Tampa, Leo Fernandez, a wingback turned forward this season, is on fire. I do have an MVP vote actually, but Fernandez is in the consideration for that race for sure. He's been absolutely dynamic. We had a lot of interconference matchups, and the earliest of which was LA Galaxy 2 going to South Beach to take on the Miami FC. And the Galaxy, who have been really poor on the road, went ahead and smacked Miami 3-1. Miami really hasn't been in great form as of late, hardly a win in the last month or so. They notably signed Joaquin Rivas from Tulsa at the midweek. Rivas is the second leading goal scorer and a peerer for Tulsa. He's a Salvadoran international, and he looked really bright here. But Galaxy, I think as a Phoenix fan could tell you from that earlier matchup this season, are a really strong side that can beat you on the counter, can beat you by going direct offensively, and they did exactly that against Miami. Miami sits behind Indy for the last playoff spot in the East still. We had another early-ish interconference game that was Orange County SC taking on Loudoun, and Orange County finally got a win for the first time since early April. It was a 3-1 victory against the visitors from Virginia. The storyline for me there, besides the good offense for Orange County, was that they benched goalkeeper Patrick Kukowski, who was one of the heroes of the title run last season. And then attacker Kurede Osundina, 18 years old, U.S. national team experience at the youth levels, got his first career assist. So exciting day for Orange County after a bit of poor form. We had two more Eastern exclusive matchups that went down. Tulsa finally got off to the schneid and got a 2-1 win in the second game of the new regime. Rodrigo da Costa, one of their stalwarts, looked really good despite losing Joaquin Rivas there. And then Memphis continued a red hot week with a 2-0 win over Detroit. Memphis obviously proving why they're leading the East at the moment. But for Detroit, I think it's a little bit of a disappointing game. This is a team that's talked a lot through its fans. They really consider themselves to be in the mix in terms of title contenders, but time and time again, they've shown that they just can't do it against those top sides. Moving back to the interconference slate though, El Paso absolutely massacred New York Red Bulls 2-5. They looked completely dynamic. New York is a team that can be really strong, pressing you, staying competitive through that sort of style. But El Paso is just too composed in the midfield, and it showed there. New Mexico was soundly defeated 2-0 by Birmingham, and they could hardly generate a shot in this game, honestly. The Legion, over time, have been known as a good defensive team, but this game was one of the best performances I've seen from them in a long while. They shut down build-up completely, and then Marlin, one of their wingers, and Jonathan Dean, a right back, were combining so brilliantly down the right side to really cause problems for New Mexico, who came into this game red hot, but I think had a little bit of a wake-up call. San Diego hosted Indy 11, and before we get to what happened on the field, Indy finally announced the purchase of a site for their stadium project. This thing has been in the works for ages. They got legislative approval a few years back, pre-COVID indeed, but they never could quite pull the trigger on the site. I'm coming from Indy, have it on good word that they actually made the purchase more than a year ago, but they were held up in the announcement for whatever reason. But the 20,000 seat multi-purpose venue is gonna be fantastic whenever it does get built. That said, on the pitch, not so great. San Diego beat them 5-0. Indy tried to switch into a new formation to defend against San Diego's very specific style of building up, and it failed completely. San Diego sitting really comfortably in the playoffs. They're on 28 points at the moment in the upper echelons of the West. Oakland hosted Atlanta United in the one and only time those teams will ever meet, assuming Atlanta does leave for MLS Next Pro. Oakland looks a little bit shaky at moments, just because Atlanta kind of has this tendency to be dynamic. But by and large, they were so good in their press and dominated Atlanta, and it showed down the stretch. Then Monterrey hosted Sacramento to round out the week's action. Monterrey looked really good for about 60 minutes of this game, pressing hard, beating Sacramento down the channels. And this is a Sacramento team that had given up 2 in their last 10 games across all competitions, but Monterrey was really getting chances at will. Sacramento probably hung over from that midweek result, honestly. And then Sacramento put on substitute forward Malik Foster fairly late in the game. He's a Caribbean forward, very quick, very strong, not the most technical player, yet he comes on, immediately scores a brace in a matter of about 3 minutes, and that's that. Sacramento did their thing, saw it out defensively, and stayed up in really the mix that's ahead of the playoff bubble out West. So as you can see, a really packed week in terms of, I think, a little bit of everything. But fun as always, this league is always fun, and I'm just happy to be here to round it up.
And we're so happy to have you on the show with us, John. Thanks for all you do for us Phoenix Rising fans. Next up is a preview of our next game.
Hey, this is Ray Samora for the Orange and Black Soccer Cast, and you're listening to The Fan Experience.
Phoenix Rising family, it's great to be a Rising fan. Even when we're losing, I'd much rather be a Rising fan than a fan of any other team in the league. Even if that team lifted the coveted USL Cup just 7 months ago. Yeah, I'm sure that I could never be a fan of Orange County, the team we'll meet in our next match on Saturday, July 2nd at home in Wild Horse Pass. Orange County Hate Week is in full swing, and it gives me tremendous joy to say that despite how badly we're doing this season, they're doing even worse. We have 21 points from 16 games, they have just 17 points from the same number of games. OC replaced their manager halfway through the season last year. He failed to get the team to the playoffs in 2020, and when things started to slip in 2021, the OC management team decided to say farewell to their manager of 4 years. Assistant manager and former captain, Richard Chaplow, he took the reins, and despite a roster that was practically crushed with injuries, he managed to get them to the playoffs and win every game they played in the playoffs. So yeah, OC did really well at the end of last season, but this season, things are not going well at all. And those who look to lay blame are pointing fingers at everyone from the manager to the owner to their captain, Michael Roscoe. Fingers are even being pointed at the fans for their lack of support and enthusiasm. All is not well in OC, and this game will be a milestone for them and for Phoenix. Phoenix Rising and Orange County Soccer Club are bitter rivals. They've played each other 27 times since 2014. Back then, they were in the USL Pro League. Phoenix won 12 of the 27 games. There were 7 draws and OC won 8. Phoenix hasn't kept a clean sheet in 8 matches, and OC hasn't kept a clean sheet in 5 matches. What does that tell us? Well, maybe we're in for a goal fest. One of OC's top-rated players, Brent Richards, famously known for the Brent Bomb throw-ins, will likely be out of the starting 11 as he's recovering from an injury. Another of their top players, Brian Olasky, has not been on the pitch for them this season. That might have something to do with his brother, Milan Olasky, being signed to the club and effectively taking his brother's spot. Their new left full-back, Danny Acosta, who plays on the Honduran national team, is out for the season, and their centre-back standout, Rob Kiernan, and their number one fan favourite, midfielder Miko Koningas, have missed recent games again due to injury. So OC are suffering from a lot of injuries, and the ones that I told you about, that's not all of them. There's even more. The ones that I mentioned are just the highlights, or the lowlights, depending on how you look at it. With all of those injuries on the OC roster, it might not be surprising that they're second last in the standings. Add to that a midweek away games to their other rivals, San Diego Loyal, and many would argue that the cards are stacked against OC in this upcoming game. Having said that, the players that they do have available are well capable of inflicting damage on any opposition. Milan Olasky has 9 goals to his credit, Eric Torres has 8, and Sean Okoli, who Rising fans have zero love for, has 3 goals. Someone we do have love for is former Phoenix Rising player Ivan Gutierrez. He's on a 25-day contract with OC. He'll have to forgive us for putting our love aside when he takes the pitch for OC, which he probably will. Since 2020, the teams have played each other 6 times. Of the 3 that were in Phoenix, we won twice and drew once. I'm going all out for a 4-0 win in Wild Horse Pass this Saturday. Let's get behind our team. Reach out to them on social media and tell them how much you're behind them, and raise your voices louder than ever when you see them on the pitch, because they're going to need your support now more than ever. Let's practice how it's going to go down with a Go Rising. I'll count us in. 3, 2, 1, Go Rising!